So hi everyone, my name is Matt Eisenegger from Destination Net Zero magazine, media partner for this year's CV show. Decarbonisation of road transport is a big topic and it's on the tip of everybody's tongue. And indeed, the complexities of moving towards decarbonisation, zero tailpipe emission, whatever you want to call it, it's difficult to get your head around. Obviously, we're in this sort of transitional state now where operators are now beginning to look at the technology and the vehicles to go on it. And I suppose it's dead easy to assume that behind the scenes, the regulators or government, whatever you want to call them, are not really playing that part. Well, I beg to differ, because joining me today is Mike Boxwell from Voltempo, who's working on one of the consortiums for a big initiative, trial, whatever you want to call it, that's currently going on. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, Matt. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Absolutely, no problem. I think it's really important. I think the man on the street, the lady on the street, you know, make the assumption that sort of government are really slow to respond to things like, you know, vital issues like decarbonisation, when it's absolutely the opposite, isn't it? So can you, for the sort of, for the novice, can you just talk us through the process of what now, we use acronyms a lot, we use ZHID, so I mean, first and foremost, that's the name of, that, I suppose, the project, but can you just talk us through it and how the government fits into it, please?
Absolutely. So where the government is really good is identifying problems which are sort of over the horizon, you know what do we need to be doing in 5 years, 10 years in advance, and then how do you actually help companies and society get there? So, and decarbonisation is one of those things. You know, if you go back to sort of, you know, the mid 2000s, and they were talking about electric cars and hydrogen cars and solar and all of these sorts of things, and the government was really at the forefront of, okay, well, what subsidies do we need to put in? What sort of structures do we need to put in? And so you saw that with solar and low cost solar on people's houses 15 years ago, and then the introduction of the grants to help bring down the cost of electric cars and also priming the pump for charging infrastructure. Going back that long, that, you know, some of the very early charging infrastructure was 100% funded by the government. So it was very much about, if you like, sort of creating the backdrop in which, you know, companies can then invest into to grow you know, with demand. And that's worked in incredibly well in some industries and maybe not always as perfectly as you would like in others, but that's what government, a lot of what government does. Now we've got electric cars up and running, and yes, there's arguments about how do we improve the infrastructure, and the government is looking at how that can be improved, and, you know, bringing industry involved as well to make sure that we have solutions for the future for people in flats and houses who can't charge off road and all of those sorts of things. All of those problems are resolvable and are happening, and with heavy goods vehicles, it was exactly the same. So you start talking to fleet operators about electric and decarbonized heavy goods vehicles. You know, a couple of years ago, everyone was saying, well, yeah, we're not going to worry about that now. We'll do that at 2030, 2035. We won't do it now. And that really was going to be leaving it too late. And what government wanted to do is say, okay, how do we make it happen now? And so the Department for Transport, and in particular the Office for Zero Emission Vehicles within that, came up with a plan and, you know, beat up the Treasury until they released some money to actually start that process of, okay, let's get some vehicles on the road, get them tried out and people using them and understanding work, and let's get some infrastructure out there so people can charge them up and know they can be charged up. They managed to get £200 million out of the Treasury, and then they asked for bids from consortiums to come in and say, look, this is how we can spend the money and actually get electric heavy goods vehicles and hydrogen heavy goods vehicles out being tested and really learning how they work and start the process of decarbonizing heavy goods vehicles. So the fund was known as ZHID, so Zero Emission HGV and Infrastructure Demonstrations. We were one of the four consortiums, E-Freight 2030, that bid for the funding and was successful in getting some of that. So we've got just under £50 million worth of government funding. That's backed up by a further £26 million worth of private funding, you know, so companies investing in their own vehicles and infrastructure as part of that. And that's, if you like, step one to get trucks onto the road and charging assistance in there.
How many vehicles are involved in it, Mike?
There's about 300 vehicles approximately. So the four consortiums, there's ourselves, E-Freight 2030, and obviously I can talk a lot more about what we're specifically doing. There's a Project Electric Freightway, which has been run by GridServe. Now, most of your members will come across GridServe from motorway EV charging. They provide most of the charging there. You've got Zen Freight, which is run by a company called Dynamon that do software systems for helping companies decarbonize. And that trial's interesting because it's both hydrogen and electric. And then there's a project called HyHaul, which is putting a hydrogen refueling corridor along the M4 from London to South Wales. And getting hydrogen vehicles trialled. So between them, it's about 300 vehicles. If you look at the companies that are involved across all the consortia, it's about 35% of the heavy goods vehicles that are on the roads today are operated by companies within those consortiums. So for an initial start, it's a pretty good coverage across the industry, and there's everyone from the smaller SMEs all the way through to the big multinationals that are involved with these consortia. So not everyone's involved yet. There are opportunities for companies that aren't involved that want to get involved, both now and in the future. And the trials start this year, a little bit last year, but majority of them this year, and they carry on until the end of 2030.
I mean, 300 vehicles, it's a big number of vehicles. I mean, obviously, it's going to provide sort of really, really good research information there, isn't it? You know, to how the vehicles run. Again, not just vehicle reliability, but I suppose it's a testing of the whole services as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, when you're looking at hydrogen vehicles or looking at electric vehicles, they are different to diesel. So hydrogen at the moment, the infrastructure isn't there, and hopefully this trial will help build up some of that infrastructure. The cost of the vehicles and the cost of running them at the moment is very high. There's issues there, and getting hold of the trucks themselves is difficult. But on the electric side, all the OEMs will have electric trucks available either already or over the next year or so. But they are currently a lot more expensive than diesel vehicles to buy, but much cheaper to run. So they're cheaper to service and maintain, and the running costs, in terms of fuel, are much lower. But you've then got the issue of range. What happens if you need to drive more than a couple of hundred miles a day? What happens in the winter when it's cold, and do the batteries get worse, and so on? And the amount of time it takes to recharge the vehicles. So there are operational differences. And at the moment, legislation also works against electric vehicles because the weight of the batteries means you can carry less in terms of overall weight if you're a weight-constrained vehicle. So lots of those things we are tackling, and we're working with the DFT to resolve. And we've got some quite exciting ways that we're going to be doing that over the next couple of years. But 300 vehicles is a good start. But it's a drop in the ocean compared to what we're going to need. What we really need to be looking at is using these trials to understand how electric vehicles work, understand what the opportunities are, because there are benefits of them over diesel vehicles as well. They're quiet. You can use them at night. You can use them in built-up areas, potentially. Councils are a lot more open to the idea of larger vehicles going into town centres if they're electric and so on. Articulated HEV could take 25 fans off the road, for instance. And if you were then moving freight into a town centre at night rather than vans during the day, you're improving the traffic flow, all sorts of things like that. But what we need to do at the same time is look at commercially, how can we make these vehicles make sense? How can we effectively, in you know, where they work, and it's not going to be everywhere, to, but where they work, make them the obvious choice rather than a diesel vehicle. You know, so that they're cheaper to buy, they're cheaper to run, and you know, the maths just add up. So that's, those are the sorts of things which we, as a consortium and as a project, that's what we've got to achieve.
I think it's quite interesting. I mean, we've been obviously with our Destination Net Zero magazine, which is obviously a magazine that and media platform that just sort of looked purely at the route to decarbonisation, whether that be using things like hydrotreated vegetable oil or hydrogen or anywhere in the middle. You know, there's something there for everybody, for every operator that wants to get on that journey. But what's become really, really apparent is, you know, that this technology is moving so quickly. You know, what we, and I dare say the technology on vehicles now is not not going to be the technology we're going to be looking at in probably 2 or 3 years' time, let alone 5 or 10 years' time. Would you agree?
So one of the things which we're really focusing on, my company Voltempo designs and manufactures charging equipment, and we design and manufacture charging equipment specifically for heavy goods vehicles. So right now, most electric trucks can only charge at 350 kilowatts. In 2 years' time, you'll have trucks that can charge in at a megawatt level, so three times as fast. So what do you put in now? Do you put in 350 kilowatt chargers? Do you put in the megawatt chargers? Actually, it's very difficult to find anyone producing megawatt chargers because it's right at the cutting edge. But that's what we do. We actually manufacture a megawatt charger, and then we can split that power. So you could charge up a whole fleet of vehicles over a long period of time. But if you need a vehicle charged really quickly, you can prioritize that, get it charged, and that back on the road. And the next generation of electric trucks, you'll be able to charge them in 45 minutes. Well, that's your driver break. Now you can double shift the vehicles and so on and so forth. Right now, it's taking a couple of hours to recharge. So what we're doing is making sure we're using the government money wisely to make sure that we're putting next generation charging in, so that you're not trying to keep playing catch up with the charging infrastructure when more powerful vehicles come along. You know, if you like, do a bit of what Elon Musk did, get the infrastructure in, and then people got the confidence they can buy the vehicles.
And so it's almost like build it and they will come, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So E-Freight, for instance, we're going to have around 100 trucks, but we'll have 230 charging spaces. Project Electric Freightway are similar. They're going to have just over 100 trucks. I think they're aiming for 140 now, which is great. And again, they will have well over 200 charging spots. So they will, wherever you go, there will be charging available. Now, clearly, as demand increases and more people buy trucks, we need to then make sure that we keep ahead of the game with the infrastructure. But we're making a good start from day one, and with a plan to make sure that we keep up as the industry evolves.
What's quite interesting is, I mean, obviously, I spend a lot of time, and we'll talk about the CV show in a little while, but talking to operators, talking to vehicle users about, I suppose, what they're reluctances sometimes, and also it's quite interesting if you do spend time on any of the OEM stands at any of the, you know, there's the questions: how much is it, how far does it go, and you know, and how much does it weigh, and they're the sort of, and you can just see we're at the very, very, and I can understand the reluctance. How much? How it goes? How it costs? It? But as we get into this, on this journey a little bit further down the road, you know, prices are going to start stabilising, aren't they? Energy costs are going to be sort of stable, and I suppose ultimately the supply of power will all, you just it's sort of getting everything to move at the same speed, isn't it? I suppose. Yeah.
Absolutely. So the great thing with these sorts of projects is that you have the time and the focus to fix these problems. So what we've seen, you know, in the last, you know, 2 years, the price of the electric HEVs have come down by 70,000, you know, 50 to 70,000 pounds each. So they're dropping, which is great. But what's going to, what do we need to make them drop further? And the answer to that is volume sales. So it's a case of what comes first. Do people place the orders but the prices don't come down, or how do we work that one? Well, as a consortium, we're working on resolving that particular problem. You know, so if we can get within the consortium, let's say 8,000 to 10,000 trucks, you know, people confirming that they will, but between now and 2030, they will switch 8 to 10 vehicles across, you know, all these different companies to electric, suddenly, you know, the manufacturers themselves can bring the price down significantly. The other element within that is that because we got a bigger project means that we can feed in to the electricity grid, you know, the electricity companies, what power we're going to require at what sites in what year and how much energy they will sell as a result of that, you know, every year between you know, installation date and 2040. Now, that means that that the energy networks themselves can invest into their own infrastructure, knowing there's going to be a demand for it, knowing there's going to be a payback for it, and it's a business case that they can take that they can do. We're working with the National Energy Service Operator, NESO, which was set up by the government last year, to basically feed into their long-term plan. And the aim is to make sure that the fleet operating market has as close as possible to priority access to the grid moving forward, you know, because that's otherwise going to be the blocker. So it's all these different pieces of the jigsaw, but these sorts of projects allow that sort of work to go on behind the scenes so that we don't get a situation where, you know, we can't get grid connections, you know, where we need them and the costs are too high and so on and so forth. We can bring all of those sorts of things down. The trucks themselves, this is generation one trucks. Renault and Volvo, for instance, have already announced what the next generation is with much longer ranges and other benefits as well. We're going to see improvements in the battery technology. And so, you know, the technical issues people are seeing today, you know, they won't be there forever. So there are right now there are operations which can switch to electric, you know, different customers and so on. There are others which are going to be impossible. It doesn't mean to say you shouldn't look at it and be aware of it, because it's going to come sooner or later. And there are some fantastic pieces of software, companies like Dynamon, for instance, with their Zero software, which we're working with Dynamon within our project to help with that modelling from across your whole fleet, to say, right, okay, well, these are the routes you can do today. This is what the benefit is, what's your cost benefit is, and so therefore you that focus on those ones. These are the ones where quite clearly it isn't an option today, but, you know, when the vehicles have got 30% extra range, or, you know, you can charge up in 45 minutes rather than 2 hours, then you can do it. And so you can then start planning for your own business, how you tackle the next sort of 10, 15 years.
Because it's really, really big picture, this stuff, isn't it? And I suppose one of the criticisms that could be levelled at logistics in many instances, and I hasten to add not all instances, it's been more of a reactive industry rather than a proactive industry. And I think where we are with it, particularly with these high-level projects, when you say we're looking at 10 years down the road, it just demonstrates that, you know, there's a thought process there. And also, I think it's vitally important. We've said this time and time again, whether it be on the podcast or on print or online, that it can be a very, very expensive mistake, this kind of, if you get it wrong from an operator's perspective. Oh, yeah. And when you're running it, when you're a business that's running on, in many cases, small margins, there's no margin for error, is there?
No, absolutely. It's interesting what you're saying about the industry being reactive rather than proactive. But the other flip side of that is you've got an industry full of problem solvers. That's what we are. You know, we know how to fix problems as an industry, and as a result, we are open to new ideas and to new opportunities and new options. And that's exciting. And I see that all the time. You're right. It's a big risk. And, you tell the fleet operator, somebody in the transport office, right, okay, you've got these vehicles, you've got to sweat your assets, you've got to keep them on the road. A truck that's parked up in your yard is costing you money. And now you're saying, right, you've got an electric vehicle here, it's got to be plugged in and into your yard for 8 hours every day. Well, hang on, that doesn't work. And so you do need to look at different business models and be creative. Incidentally, you can charge trucks quicker than that, but you know, that's just one example. It isn't business as usual. But as I say, there are benefits as well. So, for instance, you know, because they're silent, you can run them in areas at night that you couldn't necessarily do during the day. It does open up opportunities for moving bulk freight rather than in smaller vehicles, for example, and there are benefits there. We've seen a lot of big customers looking at their fleet operation, saying, well, look, you know, our Scope 3 carbon requirements mean that we have to look at decarbonizing that sector. And sometimes they're prepared to pay for it. Not always. That's still a work in progress. But they are saying that this is a problem that needs to be tackled. And so there are business opportunities that come about having electric vehicles rather than keeping to diesel or even switching to HVO. Mm. So the government grants help subsidize some of that early learning. What we've got to make sure is, though, that that the knowledge and the information we create isn't just locked into some of these big companies and what have you, that information gets disseminated across industry. Yeah. And that other people get that chance. So one of one element of e-freight that isn't in the other consortiums is that we have a membership program. We've called it an associate membership, but that's belittling it a little bit. But allowing people to get on board and hire a truck for maybe 6 months, maybe 18 months, and try them out for themselves in specific areas of their business. We'll provide you with the charging equipment. It could be temporary, it could be permanent, but it's at the subsidized cost that everybody else has got. It means that if you weren't involved with the original bids going back into 2022, you still have an opportunity to get involved. And that's something which we will have up and running by the end of this year. And that option will be there and available to people to come and join in at any time between now and December 2030. So when it's right for each individual business to say, right, okay, now I want to find out what this is all about, and it's not going to cost them anywhere near as much as if they did it from scratch themselves.
It seems a really sensible way of doing that because, you know, there are going to be operators out there that, you know, will be, in many instances, supplying their services to a client.
Yeah.
And that will, by requirement, be responsible to their environmental policies and say, look, by the way, as a supplier to us, we need you on the work that the contracts you're working need to be zero tailpipe emissions. So it gives them an entry to the market to try. Their operator gets the benefit of being able to sort of stand on their environmental policies and that goes with it. And as I say, from an operator perspective, the financial risk, the commercial risk is sort of mitigated. It's taken away and it gets everybody into the mindset of doing something a little bit different, because that's what this whole piece is about, isn't it? It's, you know, and it must, I think that's where I'm not saying industry struggles, because again, and I think I probably chose my words badly when I said the industry's reactive rather than proactive traditionally in diesel vehicles, ICE vehicles. You know, it's one technology and it's gradually evolved to get cleaner and cleaner, and we just put fuel in them and away we go. There's a lot more thought and consideration needs to be given to this as well now, isn't there?
There is, absolutely. And it's one of a number of things which is going to be changing over the next few years. I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk about artificial intelligence and what does that actually mean and so on. And if you look at transport offices, you've got data coming in from vehicle tracking, from your customers, from your, you know, all sorts of things going on at the same sort of time. Well, actually, artificial intelligence can actually start pulling some of these things together so that, for instance, you say, right, okay, I'm driving my truck back. Your tracking system could be reporting to the EV charging system saying, right, I need a charging bay in 45 minutes time. I'm going to be parked up for, and then it goes into your route management system, says, right, I'm going to be required again in 50 minutes time after that. And I need to have enough charge in my batteries to do another 100. So, you know, your EV charging system can say, right, okay, I know I've got a bay available, this amount of power I've got to have, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, a traffic jam happens and the truck's now 15 minutes late. It needs to dynamically change that. So you can do all sorts of clever things with AI to help streamline that and pull that sort of thing together.
Yeah.
And I think AI has a lot to offer this industry. And then you've got autonomous vehicles, which is a whole new ball game altogether, where a truck completely drives itself. And we'll see some of those on the roads of the UK, certainly in trial, before the end of this decade. I went over to LA back in November, and I went to visit a truck testing facility in LA. I sat in the passenger seat of an autonomous truck. There was nothing in the driver's seat, and the vehicle went connected up to a trailer, drove around a track, came back, dropped off the trailer and drove off again. And I also traveled across the streets of LA on, you know, several times in autonomous taxis with nobody sat in the front of it at all. Waymo taxis. I rode several times. My wife was with me. She refused to get anywhere near them for the first 2 days. And then she finally relented. And within half a mile, she was saying, "This is brilliant, Mike. It drives better than you do." Yeah, thanks for that. And she was right. It was fantastic. And I saw autonomous vehicle charging facilities where you had 20 bays and they were 100% used, but there was never a queue because as one vehicle disconnected, another one drove in off the road and connected up, and it was completely, you know, it was incredible to see. So that technology is out there and in use in the United States today. We are looking within our consortium at how we can actually incorporate artificial intelligence and autonomous vehicles within the trial period. So we'll be doing some feasibility study work on that, starting from May, June this year.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible stuff. Here's a question, Mike. I mean, obviously, we've got the trials going on now, and they're going to be successful whichever way you cut it. And the industry is going to be armed with so much information, and the industry will have so much more confidence in this new technology and this new DOM, which is brilliant.
Yes.
But we've got £200 million investment from the government, which will fund the trial through to its end in 2030. Where do we go after that, and who's going to pay?
Okay. So, first of all, the government knows they're going to have to invest. They are looking at where that needs to be spent, and they're looking for from some of the data outputs from these consortiums to help guide them in that area. One of the things which we've got to be careful with, it's very easy when you've got grant money sloshing around for suppliers to keep their prices high. And so effectively all that money goes into keeping companies' profit margins up rather than actually helping the industry. And unfortunately, there are lots and lots of examples of that in the past. I'm very keen to make sure we don't have that in the future. So what we need to do is make some changes to legislation in various different areas. So for instance, at the moment, we need to get the dispensation for the weight of the batteries so that you don't end up carrying less on an electric truck compared to a diesel truck. We've got to get that sorted.
There's got to be dispensation there, hasn't there?
Yeah, and I'm talking to the DfT about how we do that. I'm also talking to Highways England about that and Transport Scotland and local councils, West Midlands Combined Authority. I'm going down to the Transport to London next week or week after, can't remember now, but where we start modelling this and we're seeing what the impact on the roads are and how we actually get that done. There was a silly thing on driver hours where the concern was you couldn't plug in your electric truck and charge it and allocate that time as driver rest. I had several discussions and meetings with the DVSA, and I got the confirmation on Monday that no, they are happy for that time to be classed as a break period, so long as the driver is freely able to dispose of his time. So we've now got that in writing, which is fantastic news. That's a big step forward.
Yeah.
So we've got to get that right. We've got to beat up the energy sector on getting a bit more transparent and a bit more flexible on grid connections. And that's a two-way sword. They want from us when we're going to need the connections and give them more notice and to get a better idea of the amount of energy that's going to be sold as a result of them providing the power. Well, we can do that. That's great. That's a perfect thing we can do with these big consortiums. So We can give something that adds real value to what they're doing, and in return we'll get some benefit there as well. I'm beating up the truck manufacturers on to see what we can do on pricing. I'm beating up our own internal team to see what we can do about improving the price of the charging hardware. I've given them the target to reduce the price by 30% this year. And then when there is government funding available, it's being used to make big progress rather than just fund companies' profits.
It's really interesting what you're saying then about the operational side of it, because we've really got to throw the rule book away, haven't we? How we've been used to operating business vehicles in sort of a logistics scenario is completely different. And everybody's got to play the part in that, hasn't it? You know, the government have got to give dispensation on payload because that's just not fair. It's ridiculous not to. As you said, driving times, tachograph, you know, working time director, driving times have all got to realign themselves with this sort of piece, haven't they? And also think like vehicle manufacturers, you know, that they've got a lot of money down in this. They've been given a mandate to, you know, supply vehicles in a particular time frame, which they've done. But the whole sort of acquisition process has got to change as well. And where we either contract hire vehicles or traditionally bought vehicles for some of the businesses out there, this thing's got to change now, because these things, I would imagine, even when I've driven the vehicles, I've seen the vehicles, and the whole sort of, not argument, but the sale discussion is the total cost of ownership. The TCO is so much less than a traditional vehicle that it will align itself in. But that's not going to be enough, I don't think. I think, you know, the truck manufacturers themselves were probably, in the fullness of time, going to move away from a traditional sort of transactional route where we buy a truck or we put a balloon to almost like a pence per kilometre usage charge. Do you agree?
There's all sorts of different models that can work here. And I think we won't get there from day one. But yeah, certainly looking at sort of, you know, a pence per kilometre run is one option. And we're talking to finance companies that are looking at that model right now. I think that autonomous vehicles are also going to be a big change. To be honest, in 3 to 5 years' time, the discussion we'd be having about electric vehicles is, look, you can charge them up in 45 minutes or less. You've got a range of 300 to 400 miles, or depending on the configuration of vehicle you've gone for. And actually, yes, you can pretty much do everything you can do with an electric vehicle as you could with a diesel vehicle. I think in 3 to 4 years' time, that's the discussion you and I would be having on a podcast like this. Autonomous vehicles completely change the story. Because cost of running is so much lower. Instead of, you know, roughly what, £1.40 per driven mile or whatever, you're looking at a cost of about 40 pence per driven mile. You could be looking at a type of vehicle, a smart trailer, for instance, where you don't have a separate tractor and trailer unit, it's just one big unit. So you've got a vehicle which is a 40 ton gross vehicle weight, that's a 32 ton payload. And because you haven't got the space for the cab, you've also got an extra 20 cubic meters of load space. Suddenly you've got a very different model there. And you almost go to a freight as a service model. So it's, you know, a customer who just logs something on a computer system somewhere, and the vehicles just turn up and so on and so forth. It's not the answer for everything, but there's a certain part of the market where I think that could be a very interesting model. And I think electrification is one of those things that gets you towards that. But then, of course, where do you need the charging? You then need the charging in completely different places. You don't necessarily need them on motorways, or don't need them at a depot. You'd put them in the best places for the grid, and it would be built into the routing algorithms. I think you'd see a very different model emerging, you know, coming close to 2030, which is going to be a very interesting thing to watch.
It's fascinating times, isn't it? Absolutely fascinating times.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things in the meantime, you know, where do we put the charging hardware and so on and so forth? What we're doing is we're putting them on fleet operators' own sites. And then we're getting everybody to share what they've got, so they get access to everybody else's. And that does two things. Firstly, whenever you turn up, you're going into a secure site with security on the entrance and a CCTV and well lit. You've got access to good driver facilities, toilets, rest areas, somewhere we can make a cup of coffee, all of those sorts of things. Secondly, It means the charging costs are based on mate rates, if you like, as opposed to sites which have been put in by a charge point operator that needs to make money. So you're not paying your 60, 70, 80 pence per kilowatt hour. You're paying, the cost price of electricity plus, a few pence, if you like. A bit like what fleet operators do today with diesel. They bunker their diesel. They borrow. They buy from, a site 40 miles down the road, and they sell to other people and so on. But it's done very much as a, helping each other out rather than sort of doing it as a profit margin. And so, it gives us, it gives people confidence when they're out and about that they can charge at a reasonable rate and everything else. And the locations we're looking at, we're close to ports, so Felixstowe Docks, Southampton Docks, Bristol Docks, Immingham Docks, Liverpool Docks, Tilbury, hopefully London Gateway. East Midlands Gateway, we'll have them there, Heathrow Airport, various other places like that. And then depots close to the motorway network. So if you do need to pull over and recharge on a route, you're going to be able to do that as well. So we've got, if you like, the basic foundation. We'll start off with 35 charging hubs, each with 6 bays or more. A couple of them have got up to 12. And that will be in place by the end of this year. That will give us the biggest network and the most comprehensive network of HEV charging anywhere in Europe. You combine that with what GridServe are doing, what Zenfreight are doing, and suddenly you've got a very, very powerful network. The UK will be ahead of every other European country.
And that's so soon, though, isn't it? We're not talking 5 years' time, we're talking this year.
It's this year, and we'll have the only country where we've got widespread megawatt charging in place. Not because the trucks can use it this year, but the next generation of trucks will. So again, we'll be ahead of the field. So we started the discussion saying, "Well, what has the government done?" Well, that's what they've done.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just talking about the CV show, I mean, obviously the CV show sort of offers an opportunity for the wider audience to come and experience the technology, talk to people, find out, again, almost bust the myths, if you see what I mean, where, come and talk and look what's actually going on. And it's, again, a really, really powerful statement. If you're saying this is happening this year, this is not pipe dreams, is it? We're on the road now. And I think it's also, I think it's important, it's easy to beat the government up about things like this when they say, but absolutely proven it wrong, that a big investment going in there with the industry, this consortium have formed to do all the trials to move the industry forward. It's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's an exciting time to be working in the industry, and the support we've had from government has been exceptional. There's no other word for it. What we need to do is make sure that that continues, because what we've seen in the bus industry, for instance, there was a similar sort of situation if you go back 8, 9, 10 years, where there were early trials for buses, and the trials worked really well, and some nice reports, glossy reports produced, and then everyone went back to buying diesel buses again. And then another trial came on again. It was really successful. Everyone was happy, but then everyone went back to buying diesel buses. And we need to make sure that we don't have that situation with electric heavy goods vehicles. If we can prove it works, we need to have that pathway that takes us through to successfully rolling out lots of electric heavy goods vehicles. Not because it's the goody thing to do, but commercially it makes sense, and that that there are business models where people can make money at this. Fleet operators can have successful businesses because they've switched from diesel to electric. And that's going to take us some time, but we're getting there. And that will be a combination of private funding. It will be more government initiatives and getting the government's focus. And we're getting all of those things together. And that's really exciting.
And what are the plans for the CV show? What are you planning on doing there? Showcasing the technology, showcasing the people?
a bit of each. So you'll see some vehicles, you can kick the tires, you can talk to the to the fleet operators who are part of the trial. You'll be able to talk to people who can provide you with the charging systems. You could be able to see how you can get access to partially funded equipment through our associate membership program, and I promise you we'll have a better name for it than that by then, and see all the exciting things which are going on. Yeah, and see whether it's right for your business or not. And in many cases it is, and if it isn't, then fine, but you're aware of it for the time when you do want to go ahead.
The knowledge is key, isn't it? And I think, again, just putting the sort of media hat back on again for Destination at Zero magazine, what we try to do there is bring everything to one place, so at least the operator can go away being in a position to help make a bit more of an informed decision. And it's absolutely, this technology we're talking about with you today is not going to be for everybody.
No,
but at least if they can look at it and say, well, no, it's not for me just yet, but I know a little bit more now, then it's an indirect win, isn't it?
Yeah, when you're doing a test or a trial, there is no such thing as a failure, in as much as if it didn't work, you know why it didn't work, and you know, and so on and so forth. So, and no trial is ever 100% successful. You'll get some really positive things out of it. There'll always be one or two things you think, okay, we now know this, and therefore this is what we do in the future. And you can have that, sometimes just from a conversation or just from a, reading a report and so on and so forth. You can get all that sort of information that you can otherwise you wouldn't have.
Yeah, it's great times, though, isn't it? And
yeah.
And I keep saying there's probably more happened in the last 5 years than the previous 105 years in the industry as well. And I think it's great that, from what you've explained there about the charging infrastructure that is going into place, Britain is at the cutting edge of this, isn't it?
We absolutely are, yeah. So if you look at trailers, for instance, they haven't really changed in design for 100 years. So we're doing some development work with trailers using a company called Barclay Coachworks. They've worked out how to lighten the weight of a trailer by about 3 tons. Now, the downside of that, of course, is that a lightweight trailer is more unstable. So what they're doing is working on the under-vehicle aerodynamics to pull the trailer closer to the road the faster you go. So you get your stability through aerodynamics, not weight. So that's a really clever way of doing it. What they're now also doing is they're putting, at the moment, they're taking that 3 tons of weight away from the vehicle, from the trailer, but they're putting 3 tons of extra batteries into the vehicle. The benefit of that is you now have a very, very much longer range. So you can use that to either use as power takeoff, so you can use it for refrigerated trailers and that sort of stuff. You can use it to power the trailer itself. You can use it to extend the range of your a truck. And so, as part of our consortium, we will have those trailers being built here in Britain, which is really exciting. We're also looking to get the battery cells manufactured in Britain. So a few years ago, during lockdown with COVID, I was at a loose end trying to find out what on earth to do. And we, myself and a couple of other technical people, we designed a battery that could be charged from flat to full in 6 minutes. And we built some, and we put them into a small lightweight electric truck. And we were demonstrating it for about 4 years that we could actually, recharge these vehicles and run them after, in 6 minutes or less. The aim is to get those cells into production in Wales, and put them into these trailers and be able to demonstrate to the vehicle manufacturers that we got better batteries than you have. Batteries that can last 10,000 cycles, 20 years, and be much more robust, 2 million mile lifespan, to outlast your vehicle. You can charge it as quickly as you like. If we can do that as well, then the benefit to the UK is enormous. It's billions of pounds of exports and battery technology to the major OEMs across Europe. Now, that's a stretch target. I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen. It's an aspiration. But it's those sorts of things that we can do. We've got some great technology in the UK, and let's exploit it as much as we possibly can.
I think what you said there was very interesting about the engineering side of it, because, you know, we've been covering battery electric vehicles for a long time, and it's always been, you know, the weight, and how detrimental is to the payload. But you reverse engineering, you think, well, where can we reduce the weight so we can put the battery? And then obviously battery technology comes on and the batteries get lighter, then the engineering you've got on this end, you get the benefit of the back end as well, don't you?
Absolutely. So you know, the weight of it, you know, the HEVs weigh an awful lot. They have to weigh an awful lot because you need to keep the center of gravity low when you're carrying a large amount of weight to keep it safe. But if you've got lightweight engineering and you then combine it with aerodynamics, you can solve the problem in a different way. And it, you know, when autonomous vehicles come along, you now got vehicles driving themselves with thousands of sensors all around the vehicle and so on and so forth. Now you can make things stable through electronics. So you can now change again how the whole profile of the vehicle, so you can make the vehicle itself lighter and more efficient and safer, it transforms the discussion. So there's an awful lot we can do with technology. There really is, and Britain does genuinely lead the way in vehicle lightweighting. You know, look at Formula One, look at companies like Lotus and their chassis technology, the stuff we can do with software and systems. Again, we lead the world. We genuinely do, and there's some great opportunities for us.
I'm really looking forward to seeing these vehicles, and I mean, I suppose having the benefit of being sort of involved in the sort of the media side of it, it's great. We do get a little bit of an insight, but just to sort of, you know, talk to the people and look at the products and again, hopefully see one of the trailers. It's very, very exciting thing, very exciting times, isn't it?
It is, absolutely, yeah.
Mike, it's been absolutely amazing chatting to you. Thank you so much for taking part of the podcast. We'll see you at the CV show at the end of April, the first day of May.
Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks very much. And I'm sure the listeners and the viewers will take great pleasure in coming and having a chat to you.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Matt, and look forward to seeing you at the show.